This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Mueller to the Hill. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Wednesday, June 26. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Special counsel Robert Mueller will testify in open session next month before a pair of House committees.
The U.S. and Iran ramp up the rhetoric after Washington's sanctions threat.
Democratic White House contenders are set to take the debate stage tonight in part one of a two-parter.
And here's a good problem to have, juggling too many job offers.
More than one in four workers say they've done this, backed out after accepting a new job, which really surprised me. I think it's a measure of the tension in the job market. Employers are really fighting for talent, and oftentimes the best talent winds up with more than one offer.
Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal will be here in about 20 minutes with that story. Robert Mueller will testify in open session next month before a House committee after saying last month he hoped not to testify.
The report is my testimony. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler and House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff say the special counsel had agreed to testify in open session on July 17th. The two chairmen had for weeks threatened to issue subpoenas to force Mueller to testify, but they didn't serve such a subpoena until yesterday. Nadler told CNN he expects Mueller to detail information in the report on President Trump's efforts to stifle the related federal investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election.
There is no right to defy a congressional subpoena. The White House might assert some privilege, but when they revealed this, a lot of the information to Mueller and even to private attorneys, they waived the privilege. So I think he'll answer the questions that are put to him.
The White House and the Justice Department both declined to comment. Attorney General William Barr previously said he had no problem with Mueller testifying and would not stand in the way. A top U.S. border enforcement official has resigned amid growing clamor about the treatment of migrant children in U.S. custody. While the House approved billions of dollars in funding to address the surge of Central American families seeking asylum at the southwest border, John Sanders, acting head of Customs and Border Protection, submitted his resignation to Homeland Security effective late next week. He didn't give a reason for his departure, but sources say Sanders had been overwhelmed by the scale of the crisis and the frequent changes in personnel and policy direction inside the Trump administration. President Trump was asked to comment on Sanders' departure.
I don't know anything about it. I hear he's a very good man. I hear he's a good person. I don't know him. I don't think I ever spoke to him.
Meanwhile, the House bill would provide emergency funding at the border. Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
It's not an immigration bill. It's an appropriations bill to meet the needs of our children, so we can remove the needs that they have, but also the shame that we should have that they don't have diapers and toothbrushes and the care.
But the White House is already threatening to veto that bill, saying it includes provisions that would make the country less safe. The Senate is said to be ready to proceed with its own version of a border bill. President Trump and Iranian President Hassan Rouhani are ramping up their confrontational tone, trading accusations while international leaders work toward expected talks aimed at defusing the conflict at a global summit at the end of the week. Rouhani denounced new U.S. sanctions targeting the assets of the Supreme Leader and several top military commanders, calling them outrageous and stupid, and saying the move closed the door on diplomacy and threatened global stability. In return, Trump threatened a heavy military response in the event of an Iranian attack. He wrote on Twitter that any attack by Iran on anything American will be met with great and overwhelming force, and that in some areas, overwhelming will mean obliteration. Acting Secretary of Defense Mark Esper had a softer message.
This is not Iran versus the United States. this is the Iran, certainly versus the region, and arguably the broader global environment. So we need to all work together and get on a diplomatic path and reach a new, better agreement than what we had before.
Iran maintains the Trump administration began the current conflict by dropping out of a 2015 international nuclear agreement, which promised Iran relief from economic sanctions in exchange for agreeing to limits on its nuclear program. It's 11 minutes after the hour.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. So what does it mean to be a moderate Democrat? The Third Way, an influential middle-of-the-road Democratic think tank, is trying to articulate an agenda that moderate voters can rally around. Here with more is Josh Kraushara of National Journal. Josh, what was being talked about in a recent meeting in Charleston?
Well, the main message was trying to figure out how to defeat President Trump. But my big takeaway was that this famously centrist group, which opposes, you know, big government spending on and raising taxes and a lot of the liberal agenda of years past, they were increasingly accepting of Elizabeth Warren as the possible Democratic nominee, as someone who could win the presidential nomination. And it made me wonder, like, what does it mean if you're the leading centrist Democratic group fighting against the left, fighting against socialism, and you're willing to get behind Elizabeth Warren? What does that say about where the Democratic Party stands? What does that say about where Democratic moderates stand today?
How do you think Elizabeth Warren is going about picking up support?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, she's taking positions that are more and more to the left. Most recently, she actually unveiled an education plan, tossing the idea that public universities wouldn't charge tuition anymore. She's talked about relieving the debt on a whole lot of students who have accrued student loans, and that would cost trillions of dollars to achieve. So it's not like she's moderating her economic policies to win over support. I think what she's doing, or what she has done, is that she has relationships with the Democratic establishment. She's gone on campaign trips to support vulnerable incumbents, the campaign for newly elected congressmen and senators. And that goodwill is giving her a little more credibility in a way that it hasn't translated for someone like Bernie Sanders, who is an out-and-about socialist. I'd also would add that whenever the very beginning of the campaign, Elizabeth Warren said, "I am a capitalist. I support regulations, but I'm a capitalist." Even though her policies are pretty darn progressive, that statement of support for capitalism, I think, bought her some goodwill as well with the more moderate voices in the Democratic Party.
We're speaking with Josh Kraushara of the National Journal. Josh, why is this group in the middle concerned about any tilt to the left?
Well, their stated claim is they worry that Bernie Sanders could cost Democrats the election. They think that Bernie Sanders, not only do they not agree with his view of economic policy, that they don't agree that socialism is the answer, but they also think Bernie Sanders is the least electable Democrat among the top-tier candidates. Now I think this, if you look at the polls, Warren is actually polling worse than Sanders is, so there is some question about that judgment. But the main tenor of this convention was about finding someone to beat Trump and making the case that you can't go too far to the left, that's the one way that Democrats could blow a very winnable election.
Why isn't Joe Biden an easy selection for everybody to get behind?
Well, you know, that was the interesting thing that I got out of this meeting, which is that you would think Joe Biden, given that he's leading in the polls and is doing extremely well with moderate voters in the Democratic Party, you would think that Biden would be the top choice for these third way leaders. The reality is that there's a lot of concern about Joe Biden's ability to run a top-notch campaign. And as I reported in the piece, among the leaders in the group, they had a board meeting a few weeks ago. They took an informal vote on who they liked the most. And Joe Biden didn't get a single vote among this leading moderate group, among who would be the favored candidate for the Democrats. So this is this disconnect. I think Joe Biden, there's actually a sort of a disconnect between the elites and your average voters. Whether you're on the left or on the middle or wherever you are on the ideological spectrum, a lot of Democrats at the elite level, the leadership level, have some serious doubts about Joe Biden and whether he can run a top-notch campaign and win the nomination.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Krasshauer of the National Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, former special counsel Robert Mueller had said in his only public statement that his 400-page report is his testimony, but now he's agreed to testify publicly before the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees on July 17th. Chairman Adam Schiff says the testimonies will be back-to-back but separate.
We have any number of questions about the counterintelligence investigation and the role of the counterintelligence agents within his team, to questions about some of the prosecutorial decisions that were made. We have fact questions about some of the statements that are made in the report.
A subpoena is what ultimately broke the deadlock after weeks of fruitless negotiations between the former special counsel's team and House Democrats. Under pressure to address increasing numbers of migrants crossing the border and the condition of detention facilities, acting U.S. Customs and Border Protection Chief John Sanders has decided to call it quits. President Trump's expected to name acting Director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement Mark Morgan to replace Sanders. The Director of Communications for First Lady Melania Trump will be the new White House Press Secretary and Director of Communications. Mrs. Trump announced the promotion of Stephanie Grisham in a tweet. Stocks were down Tuesday as investors reacted to a disappointing consumer confidence report, and Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell declared that he and his colleagues on the central bank haven't decided whether to lower interest rates.
The question my colleagues and I are grappling with is whether these uncertainties will continue to weigh on the outlook and thus call for additional policy accommodation.
Powell spoke to the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. Comedian Bill Cosby is appealing the sex assault conviction that landed him in prison. He's complaining the testimony of five other accusers was strikingly dissimilar to the pending felony charges and shouldn't have been permitted. The 81-year-old Cosby's been serving a 3 to 10 year prison term since September at a Pennsylvania facility. Two people have been arrested in an odd string of burglaries and thefts across New Jersey. Dozens of Little League concession stands have been hit in seven counties from north to south since April. Police say the burglars smashed the doors of the snack stands and stole cash, candy, beverage, and even cooking and storage units, taking everything from hot dogs to the hot dog grills.
Boo. Why are you picking on kids?
Seriously. And what are you going to do with all that?
Have a cookout, I guess.
Big one.
Thanks, Rosa. Remember the days when you couldn't seem to land a job anywhere? Now many people are juggling multiple offers, which can create some sticky situations. As Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal tells us, how you navigate this decision can have career repercussions years later. Sue, let's start with the people who accept a job offer and back out. Is this common?
More than one in four workers say they've done this, backed out after accepting a new job, which really surprised me. I think it's a measure of the tension in the job market. Employers are really fighting for talent, and oftentimes the best talent winds up with more than one offer.
If you are interviewing with several companies and then a couple of offers come through, should you tell potential employers you have other offers?
This is a delicate thing, and many people are uncomfortable about it, but yes, it's better to be transparent. Today, most employers who are interviewing someone they're really interested in assume that person is going to have other employers interested, too. It's much better to be transparent since they suspect you're probably in the market with other offers, too. So while you express appreciation for the offer, you also say, could I have just a little bit more time? I expect another offer in a day or two, and I would like to compare the two in detail. Something like that.
Yeah. Is it fair to ask for more time without putting yourself kind of in a bad situation?
Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes an employer will say, we can't wait that long. A good way to head this off is to ask, inquire up front as you get closer into an offer and you sense the negotiation or the interviews are headed that way. Ask, what is your timeline on this? When would you like to have a decision? Or if you're given an offer, ask, you know, would it be possible for me to take a few days? What's your outside limit that on the time I could have to consider this? I am expecting another offer. And employers are not going to be surprised by that. They're going to be grateful if you're transparent about it rather than just disappearing.
We're speaking with Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. Sue, if you get a couple of offers, how do you evaluate them?
This is really interesting. As I did this story, I realized that many people err in the direction of looking only at pay or pay and benefits. It's kind of, you have bragging rights if you get, you know, a 20% increase in pay. It's really important to sit down and look at them in detail, compare them on, you know, not only benefits, but quality of life issues, the commute, will you have time to exercise, what will this do to your personal and family life, and think it over. That's why it's really important not to rush into a decision.
How do you react when you get an offer?
Always with enthusiasm and appreciation. Even if maybe you don't feel all that excited, realize that this employer has put a lot of time and thought into making that offer. Express empathy and appreciation. This is, you know, great. I'm so happy. You know, this is wonderful. Thank you so much. And show some interest in a positive frame of mind. You don't have to give them a yes or no right away, but they're going to appreciate it if you treat them like human beings who just offered you something.
It's pretty easy to accept a job offer you're excited about. How do you turn someone down?
Well, it's also the same rule applies. Thank you so much for the time you spent with me and for giving me such a well-thought-out offer. This has been a really difficult decision. And then you go on to say, I've accepted an offer somewhere else, and you give some sense of why. The attributes of that offer were so compelling that you had to turn down this other one that you entertained for a while. I think it really is more believable when you tell an employer why you decided to take another job, and it will also help them to do better in the future in their recruiting efforts.
Thanks, Sue. Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. It's coming up on 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Not a big summer guy. Too hot. Not a big winter guy either. Too cold. My favorite season? Safety season. Because it's every season, 24/7, 365. For all things safety, I trust Grainger. Grainger's safety experts have the safety solutions and expertise to help keep your facility safe and your people safer all year long. Seasons may change, but Grainger's always got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by for all things safety. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
On this Wednesday, June 26th, Jennifer Koshinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines. Special Counsel Robert Mueller agrees to publicly testify before two House panels about the Russia probe. The House passes a $4.5 billion border funding bill. The nation's federal debt is projected to reach unprecedented levels over the next 30 years if lawmakers don't change current laws. The Justice Department investigating collusion claims in the chicken industry. And human ashes, Legos, and a sandwich. The strange things we send into space. That story in about 20 minutes. Does Amazon really pay no taxes? Well, it's complicated. Here to sort it out, Richard Rubin of the Wall Street Journal. Richard, who's been criticizing the company?
So you're seeing it largely from Democratic politicians, particularly former Vice President Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren, who are both running for president. They're using this to sort of point out problems that they see in the tax code and pointing to reports that show Amazon not paying any federal taxes in 2018.
Do they think that Amazon is doing anything shady?
Well, not necessarily. I think there's sort of two separate things. One is, like, Amazon certainly has a long-running dispute with the IRS over stuff that's totally unrelated to 2018. So there is aggressive tax avoidance type stuff that Amazon has done in the past. That's not really what's happened here. What's happened here is it's the interplay of a bunch of different pieces of the tax code that may, and we don't know for sure, we can't know for sure, but that may really minimize their tax bill. And we can walk through what some of those pieces are.
Rich, why do we know so little about Amazon's tax returns?
Well, because tax returns in the U.S. are private. So just like my tax return and Amazon's tax return are treated the same way under federal law, and the IRS can't reveal them. The company, of course, could reveal them, but they don't. And, you know, what they do release is information in their financial statements, and that's prepared for shareholders who look at tax information differently from how policy professionals might look at it. So the question of what's on their 2018 tax return is a sort of relevant question for someone trying to change the tax law, but it's not really the question that the accounting rules try to answer.
We're speaking with Richard Rubin of the Wall Street Journal about Amazon's tax situation. In looking at the numbers yourself, what could you tell about the situation?
Okay, so I think what you can tell if you look at a quick snapshot of what they may have paid in the U.S. for 2018, it looks close to zero and could be negative because the amount of net operating losses they're carrying forward, sort of losses built up over years, went up over 2018 for U.S. federal purposes. So that tells you that they're accumulating losses perhaps faster than they're earning income. But at the same time, you have to look at more than just the U.S. They did pay... They do probably pay some foreign taxes, some state income taxes, and you have to look over a longer period. So if you look over, because the business cycle moves, companies change, taxes can sort of occur in one year, even though they're attributable to income in a different year. And so, you know, if you look over a longer run, depending on what measure you use, their tax rate is somewhere globally is somewhere between 8% and 13%, and that's certainly not the 21% or 35% full U.S. rate that had been in effect. But it's not zero either.
Is the problem that Amazon makes so much money as opposed to some other companies?
Amazon actually doesn't make that much money, at least until the last couple of years. Their U.S. profits last year were about $11 billion before taxes. And, you know, that's sort of one of their most profitable years. In the past, they've been, and they are still, especially on the retail side of the business, a relatively high-volume, low-margin company. That's what retail kind of is. I think their sort of cloud services businesses and other things they're getting into are, may end up being more profitable. But I think the thing we really need to think about is why their tax rate might be low, regardless of how high their profits are or aren't. And there are a few reasons. One is they get, and a lot of them relate to things that Congress has specifically created, the research and development tax credit, rules that let them write off their equipment expenses immediately instead of depreciating them over time. Those things can reduce their taxes, but that's the point of those things that Congress put in there. So when we think about whether it's a problem that they have a zero, low, or negative tax bill, whatever the answer actually is, we have to think about why and what the consequences might be of changing that. And that's not to endorse one approach or another, but it's just we should know why it is and what that might mean if it were changed.
Thanks, Richard. Richard Rubin of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. It's time to go beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, some good news, house hunters. Your dream home just got a little bit cheaper, $50 million cheaper to be exact. A Los Angeles property known as the Chartwell, currently the most expensive house listing in the U.S., has reduced its price to a mere $195 million. Now, when it hit the market in October, it was listed at $245 million. And if you aren't convinced yet this is a bargain you need to pounce on, keep in mind that the property was originally announced in August of 2017 for a whopping $350 million. Aside from the price tag, the home is also popular for being the set of the 1960s TV show The Beverly Hillbillies. Its most recent owner purchased the house in 1986 for $13.5 million. The property is said to have doubled in size since then, and as you might imagine, comes with a lot of cool features. It has a car gallery that can hold 40 cars, a 12,000 bottle wine cellar, and of course, a pretty nice pool.
It went from $13.5 million to $350 million? They're wondering why it's not selling?
I think someone misjudged the market there, it would appear. Yeah, I'm not exactly. I'm not exactly sure who they're marketing this towards. Like, this isn't even something you probably even need to like put out like in the in the newspaper or whatever they do online with these kind of things. Because there's only like three people in America that can actually afford this. So just call them directly. Like, just call them up on the phone and you'd be like, "Hey, Bill Gates, do you want a house?" Yeah. No, okay, sure. Yeah, just go on to the next billionaire. Like, there's only a couple of people in America who could afford this.
I can't imagine the '60s TV show The Hillbillies makes it look that grand. Who needs that?
I'm not exactly sure. So I have a feeling it might come eventually into our price range. We'll see. We'll have to keep track of that. And Jen, I was saving this one specifically for you. If you're looking for a powerful thrill and a chance to get over your fear of snakes, here's something you can try out after work today: a snake massage. According to CBS New York, all you have to do is take the short ride up the turnpike to New York City and visit a shop owned by a woman named Serpentessa, who can help you with the service for a low, low price of $300. Well worth the cost, as the massage lasts a minimum of 1 hour and 15 minutes and involves letting multiple boa constrictors slither across your body. According to Serpentessa, the snakes tone and stimulate their nerve in our bodies that helps release endorphins and oxytocin. So the next question you may have after "when can I make my appointment" might be, is it safe? Well, the snake therapist herself admits that she cannot control where the snakes go on a person's body, though she says that her snakes have never hurt anyone.
I hate you.
She obviously, you cuddle up at night with a handful of cats. She cuddles up with snakes.
Is just horrifying.
To each their own. This is something that you will wake up in a cold sweat thinking
about. Thank you so much. They're so big and disgusting.
Yes, we're not talking tiny little snakes here. We're talking large boa constrictors, multiple boa constrictors.
I hate you so, so much.
You're welcome.
It's 13 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Well, some 32 million Americans now suffer from some kind of food allergy. That includes 1 in 13 children under the age of 18, and the prevalence of kids diagnosed has increased by over 50% in the last two decades alone. There are a handful of theories about what's to blame for the steady rise: overly sterilized home environments, antibiotics, and pollution. But a new study from Boston Children's Hospital and Brigham and Women's Hospital finds that a lack of certain gut bacteria is actually what's driving many food allergies. It's still too early to say for sure, but these findings could go to shape the future of food allergy prevention and treatment. Scientists collected stool samples from children who suffered from food allergies and samples from those who didn't, and discovered that food allergy sufferers did indeed have some different bacteria than others. They went on to give allergy sufferers the right bacteria and found they're completely resistant to food allergy. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, a subpoena is bringing former special counsel Robert Mueller to testify before the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees next month. House Democrats are hoping hearing him answer questions in a televised setting about the Trump campaign's willingness to accept Russian help and the president's alleged obstruction of justice will sway public opinion, which so far has been fairly indifferent since public readings of Mueller's redacted report. President Trump is distancing himself from John Sanders, the acting U.S. Customs and Border Protection chief who resigned yesterday.
I don't know anything about it. I hear he's a very good man. I hear he's a good person. I don't know him. I don't think I ever spoke to him.
Sanders didn't cite a reason for his departure, but it follows the relocation of more than 200 detained children after reports of unsanitary conditions and inadequate food. Police say a University of Utah senior missing for more than a week was last seen meeting someone at a park at 3 a.m. Mackenzie Lueck was returning home from the Salt Lake City Airport in the early morning hours on June 17th and dropped off at a park by a Lyft driver who says Lueck didn't seem to be in distress, Assistant Police Chief Tom Dowd.
Who is the person she met in Hatch Park? Does Mackenzie have an alternate phone that she has used in the past or is using? Does she have social media accounts that we don't know about?
Luwak's phone is off and she's missed classes, exams, and another flight. A preliminary report says the pilot of a helicopter who died when he crash-landed on top of a skyscraper in Manhattan this month was badly disoriented. The National Transportation Safety Board says Tim McCormack asked to return to a heliport shortly after taking off in bad weather and admitted he didn't know where he was. A transport company driver with a history of traffic arrests pleaded not guilty to charges in Friday's fatal collision with a group of motorcyclists on a rural highway in New Hampshire.
Mr. Volodymyr Zukovsky of West Springfield, Massachusetts, was formally charged with 7 counts of negligent homicide.
Coas County Attorney John McCormick. Zukovsky will stay in jail after the judge called his driving record a potential danger to the public and himself. Investigators say Zukovsky was driving erratically when he collided with the motorcycles after crossing the center line. Want to get mom or dad off the couch? Get them a pedometer. British researchers say it's all about goal setting, and their data shows folks aged 45 to 75 who measured how much they walk with a pedometer or an app increased their physical activity over time and decreased their risk of heart attacks, strokes, and cardiovascular events.
Or we could get them ourselves if we're in that age bracket.
Let's go get him anyway.
Thanks, Rossa. Ever since the early days of human spaceflight, humans have been carrying earthly things into space. Most are practical science experiments, gear for astronauts, and tools. But as Florida Today points out, some items have made it to space were pretty ordinary, but also unexpected. Among the unexpected, Buzz Lightyear, the action figure whose catchphrase is "to infinity and beyond," made his way onto the International Space Station in 2008. The Juno spacecraft carried tiny Lego figurines. Luke Skywalker's original lightsaber prop from the Star Wars film franchise got a ride to the ISS to celebrate the film's 30th anniversary in 2007. In the sports world, dirt from Yankee Stadium, a NASCAR starter flag, the New York Mets home plate, and all kinds of jerseys have made pilgrimage to the stars. A few interesting culinary delights have managed to make it into space. In 2001, Pizza Hut spent $1 million to become the first pizza chain to deliver to space. Specifically, they sent a pie to a cosmonaut who was having a bit of a pizza craving while aboard the ISS. An astronaut, John Young, smuggled a corned beef sandwich aboard Gemini 3 in 1965. And that'll do it for this hour. For Rossa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.